Let's start things off with a softball question. What is the meaning of life? You know me by now, I'm not actually going to attempt to answer that question, but Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl did a pretty nice job, I think, in his book Man's Search for Meaning when he said, and I'm paraphrasing, "We ask what is the meaning of life, but actually it is life that is asking that question of us, and it's our actions and decisions that provide the answer." In other words, the meaning of each individual's life is defined by the actions and decisions that individual pursues. How I choose to spend my life is the very thing that gives my life its meaning, that gives me my purpose. I often think of myself as being very fortunate that I've never really been confused about who I want to be in the world and the kind of things I'm passionate about and drawn to. My purpose will obviously not be yours, and yours will not be someone else's. I think that's kind of the whole point of what Frankl is saying. There is no one overarching capital P purpose to the phenomenon of life, at least not one that we know of in any definitive sense. If there is any such thing as a purpose to any one of our individual tracks, it surely has to be found in the way we are spending our time. The people we spend it with, the places we choose to be, the things we invest our energy and time into. I recently became a super fan of my guest today when I heard him on a friend's podcast talking about the two albums he released in 2020 and 2021. I really connected with and related to the way he spoke about his process as a songwriter. He seemed to be coming from a place that was very familiar to me, and he spoke about it with a refreshing self-awareness. And then I listened to his albums and was just blown away by what a skillful and consistently beautiful songwriter and musician he is. I strongly urge you to do like I did and invest some time into listening to his albums after you listen to this conversation, of course. In fact, I'm going to play you a portion of one of his songs right here before we even get into my conversation with him. As a musician, he goes by the moniker Slow Leaves. This is a song from his 2021 album, Holiday. The song is called About Your Love. Enjoy.
Yeah, you always got the best of me, but you'll never get the rest of me. I know you're good at making what you will. I feel a loneliness I can't conceal. When I listen to the radio, every other song is one you know. I turn it down because it makes me sad, and sing along because I like the band.
From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with Grant Davidson, a.k.a. Slow Leaves, about purpose.
In my mind, all the time.
Well, cool. I'm really glad I got you on. I wanted to have you on. I heard you on my buddy Hugh's podcast. I was just like on a drive from L.A. to Utah, and I happened to tune in for it. I'm so glad I did, because he started the show by playing Feel It Too, and I was like, right off the bat, I was like, oh, yeah, I like this. I was like, as soon as this podcast is done, I'm going to have to put on one of this guy's records. And then I listened to the interview and I just liked the way that you spoke about the craft and spoke about your experience as a songwriter and as a musician. And I related to it so much, specifically as just like a person who's just sort of toiled in this pursuit for my entire adult life and has not really been able to, you know, have much breakthrough success. There's little moments, there's little flashes, there's little things that moments of validation, but I really, really related to it. And then I listened to Holiday was my first record, and I spent that entire trip listening to your music. I didn't listen to anything else. And I just, every single time I got in the car, I was listening to one of your records, and it was like 5 days straight. And I listened to everything that you've got on streaming platforms. And I really just like, it's been a while since I've found something like that, that I just was like, wow, this is my jam right here. This is my music. And, I don't know, like really, really related to it. So it's really cool to get to talk to you. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience of finding someone, like maybe you play a show with someone or you just find someone through TikTok or something. And you have that experience where you listen to their music and you're like mad that they're not bigger, you know, you're like upset that there's not more people that you can talk to about this, that you can't go to more people and be like, hey, have you heard the latest Slow Leaves record? Like you gotta, you know, and I don't know if you've had that experience, but I was having that experience and I was talking to my brother about it because I showed my brother your music too. I was like, dude, listen to this guy. And he's now a huge fan as well. But then I was also like, I don't know, maybe that's the thing that makes it kind of special is that like, he's a person that I can reach out to and say like, hey, that music means a lot to me. That those songs mean a lot to me. And he'll see it and he'll respond. Whereas like when I enjoy the latest Jason Isbell record, like if I reach out to him, he's most likely not going to like see the message and he's most likely not going to respond.
He's protected by layers. He's at the center of a protective onion for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Management team and everything. Yeah.
And it's not cause he's a dick. It's not cause he like, it's not cause he doesn't
care. Like to reach out to him, there has to be some filtering, right? Whereas me, it's
it's just you.
It's the opposite. I'm like emailing people like, hey, you want to talk to me?
Yeah, I know that. I know how that goes.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, I'm blown away by I could just imagine what kind of road trip that would be. That would be I could totally relate to that kind of thing, like just immersing yourself basically, you know, in a headspace. And I've done that where, you know, I've had been in the car by myself and basically had the same song on repeat for like 3 hours, you know, just because I want to live in that headspace. And my records have some variety in them, but essentially, and maybe this is what resonated with you in part, is like most of my songs, I'm basically trying to like say the same thing different ways. And simply put, like, that's just me trying to like get a handle on just like being a person but being a person who's sort of like at the whim of their emotions like that, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I laugh, but obviously I'm incredibly flattered and I'm thrilled that, you know, that you connected like that, because that's ultimately the best compliment. That's what you want, right? Mm-hmm. But it must have been a pretty heady heady trip, a reflective trip.
Well, you know, it's interesting to go backwards through your discography because, and I do this a lot when I discover, and I think a lot of people do, it's like they always want to listen to the latest thing first, you know, like what's the most recent thing you did, because I want to hear like what you're up to right now, even if I just discovered you. But then going backwards, you sort of get this idea, I feel, and I might be wrong about this, but that like the title Holiday is not only talking about, you probably wrote the album during quarantine and while you were like, you know, mostly stuck inside and taking a holiday from regular life during a global situation, but also it feels as I go backwards through the albums, like a holiday from your typical headspace and your typical songwriting and sort of a departure from where you are normally artistically. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, and you know, connecting to what you said earlier about, you know, me not ever being famous, whether I deserve that or not. Well, I mean, nobody deserves it, but certainly I, you know, there's moments where I'd like that, right? Or at least what comes with it. But whatever it is, you know what it's like working in creative, you know, industry. It's like there's so much that you have to get through, even if you're really good. And but I think you're right that like my the album before Holiday, Shelf Life in particular, is purely a record about a guy, me, I mean, who you know, is lamenting that I didn't do better in music. And so trying to come to terms with that, and you know, kind of that measuring my expectations, you know, which were that I would have had more success. You know, and I think a lot of people think like that because there's no shortage of talented people working in arts. And at a certain point, you have to sort of look in the mirror and wonder how much of that comes from just delusion versus like genuine talent that you believe you have. So it was really me wrestling with that, because here I was, you know, getting a little bit older. I didn't really start music for real until I was in my 30s, mind you, just for context. But
really? Wait, hold on. You didn't start making music till you were in your 30s?
Well, no, I was making music, but I was I didn't really give it a proper chance. I was, you know, I was writing songs through my 20s and sort of I made a few shoestring budget albums.
I was going to say, I was like, if you just picked it up, and you're, I was going to be like, okay, now I really don't like you and I'm mad.
No, there's a, it's not as mythical as that.
Yeah.
I started playing guitar at 15 and, you know, writing songs and stuff. Basically, I went to university. I did a whole bunch of like soft jobs because I still wanted to do something with music, but I never did. You know, I had a foot in one world and a foot in the other and never went anywhere in either. So it was really in my 30s. I was about 33. And my wife had heard the same, you know, me going up and down emotionally and heard the same sort of thing over and over, like, what am I even doing this for? You know, like, and she was, we had dinner one night and she said, why don't you just quit your job and we'll figure it out. And it was the first time I really ever looked at it like it was a realistic possibility. And I said, okay, let's, and we, and that was, you know, the start of me deciding that if I didn't like, you know, really give music a the proper attention and time, then for sure I would grow old and regret it. And so, yeah, I was 33. And then that's when I took on the name Slow Leaves. I sort of wanted to see that as like a new beginning and doing things like properly. I mean, you know,
sure.
Properly with
miracle.
And so that out of that came my first Slow Leave record, which was Beauty Is So Common. So anyway, fast forward a bit, you know, and when I made Shelf Life, you know, which was a couple of years ago, it, in a lot of ways, it was almost like a resignation record, you know, it was sort of like a coming to terms, like, look, I know I've succeeded in what I really wanted to do, which was make music that I felt was, had like true artistic merit and that I could really like hang my pride on, you know, something that I knew was genuine to me, whether other people saw it or not. And that's really, I think, all we're anyone's after. But I think if you do that right, someone's going to connect to it because they, people feel that what's genuine in it, right?
Yeah.
So I guess, again, this is a long way of getting back to sort of what you're saying is it's absolutely true that that record would not have existed if I had some kind of like success, you know, traditional. Yes, before that, and who knows, maybe I would have made a better record, but I'm really proud of that record for that reason, because it's a very singular, I tapped into a very singular experience that I had, not singular in terms of nobody's ever experienced that, but for me, it was really, I felt like that was sort of the unique place that I could really tap into, being a, you know, I was in my late 30s, you know, with a son and a wife, and just dealing with, you know, regular life stuff and trying to still do something great artistically.
Yeah. I just relate to it all so much. and you're saying all the right things when it comes to kind of the overarching thing of what I want to talk about today, which is sort of this idea of living a life that has purpose and finding what that purpose is and finding meaning and being bold enough to sort of embrace that and what that can look like. You made this TikTok that I don't think I've ever related to TikTok more that, and it was during this trend that people were doing where they were talking to their younger selves, and they were like, there was a song that they were using, but you decided to forego the song and you just did a straight up dialogue with yourself where it was like me talking to a younger version of myself. And I just felt like that's how the conversation would go if I were to talk to my younger self now. I'm 33 right now. And I feel like if I were to have a conversation with myself at 19 or 20, it would be like that. It would be, you know, there's like this younger version of yourself that's like, hey, are we still doing music? And the older version's like, yeah, we are still doing it. And it's like, cool. All right. So how's it going? Have we managed to break through? And it's like, not really. No. And then the younger version's like, okay, so do you think that we should maybe move on? Like, do you ever think about like maybe getting a real job or something like that? And I love the response, which is every day, all the time. Like, you know, I think all the time I think about it, you know, and then it's like, okay, so why not? And then the answer is so perfect. And it really is. I think about this all the time because people ask me all the time. I have friends and family members all the time say, have you ever thought about doing this? Or have you ever thought about like maybe going you'd be a great lawyer. You love debating. Like I think, or you'd be a great social worker. You seem to be, you know, like maybe you should get a master's in that. And the answer is every time I think about doing something else or abandoning this, or just think about my life, and the fact that this might be the only chance I get at being a conscious entity and experiencing consciousness, I can't escape the feeling that I've got to do what feels most intellectually and emotionally honest to me. And that always has been sort of this pursuit of like being an artist and.
Yeah. And you know. I mean, obviously like easier said than done, right? The assumption there, like the people who, I mean, the real conversation, I have this pointing stick here.
I don't know what. Oh, it's great.
Fidgeting tool. The assumption, like the people I have in my head, it's like friends, it's like family, whether they're thinking that or not, I sort of interpret them as thinking these things. And it's the assumption, like you're saying, is it's always that, well, because you're not thriving in terms of like being able to demonstrate how much money you've earned, you know,
that
somehow you're not succeeding. And I know that's like, it's a really simple concept, right? But it's like, our lives are so permeated, so embedded with this super basic notion, this sort of this signifier that everybody struts around with, whether they're even conscious of it or not, is that if you can't demonstrate what you've been able to buy, then it's assumed that you're not succeeding, right?
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, it's just a simple equation that most people are seeking money in life, right? Because of obviously money is seen as a means to happiness of some kind.
Well, and it's the structure of the society in which we live, that it's just like you just need to have money to have, you know, health insurance and or whatever. Or,
well, that's true. Yeah.
A car, a house, like you know, so it's the capitalistic nature of the
Well, we need
world.
Money. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like you could... Yeah. Could drive around in a rusty shit bucket, uh-huh. Right? And it's a tool to get you from A to B.
Sure.
And I know it because I'm driving a car that's kind of got a bit of rust on it.
Yeah.
And my son plays hockey and I go to the rink, and hockey's not a cheap sport, right?
Uh-huh.
Go to the rink and it's just like I pull up in the parking lot and I'm immediately swallowed on both sides by massive trucks.
Yeah.
Everybody drives a massive truck. And I just can't help a feeling that, you know, that they're looking at me like, oh, this guy's not doing so well, or, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm not succeeding, right? Maybe I don't have a good job or whatever. That's just the assumption, whether they think that or not. I don't know. I mean, a lot of it is purely in my head. It's an insecurity, right? But I just mean, it's really hard to combat that. And I'm probably like you and like a lot of people, you have to actively work against that to sort of separate those things, to separate what you need in your life to be sort of content versus like what you want in your life to appear content. And it's a fine line sometimes, but it takes a lot of work to separate those things, and it's ongoing. And that's why I spend a lot of time doing it. I'm fortunate because I embed that into the art that I make. The work that I do is one and the same, where I think about a lot. I write about it. But it's ongoing. It's really easy to just feel those pressures and feel like you're drowning when everybody else is swimming at the surface.
Well, and again, it's this, like you talk about writing about it, and that to me is what makes your songwriting so relatable, is that, sorry, I'm clearing my throat so many times in this interview, but it's the fact that you're going through struggles that the majority of people who are working on doing something like this are going through. You're experiencing, because that's the reality, is the older you get and the longer you pursue something like this, the more you start realizing, oh, the vast majority of people who are living life as an artist or in, you know, trying to make whatever meager money they can doing it, whether it's selling paintings or writing poetry and trying to maybe get something published in a local journal or something like that, or a local paper, a poem here and there, a photographer who's got a business where they maybe shoot weddings, but really their passion is like they like to go out and shoot other things that maybe they every once in a while, every few years, maybe they're lucky enough to get a show in a local gallery or something like that. The vast majority of people who are doing something like this are not living lives of massive public success where everyone can really see that they've been able to garner a national or international audience, awards, acclaim. But that's what's interesting, is that writing from that perspective makes you, to me, more human and relatable. And it's this interesting paradox in Catch-22, because then I'm like, well, I want more people to hear this perspective and to hear this voice. But it's the very nature of the fact that, like, there's only so many people that are hearing it that gives rise to that particular kind of art. And I think it's such an interesting, weird paradox that we find ourselves in, that it's like, well, and I hear this too with artists that I really respect who find success, where it's like, it's not that they become worse songwriters or anything like that, but it's sort of like that they have to become more storytellers, and they have to sort of invent characters and situations to sing about and write about instead of just talking about their own experience. And it's not that it makes for worse songs. It's just that it's maybe less personal, because if they were actually talking about what's really griping them that day, it might be something that's so unrelatable to the audience, and so things get a little bit more generalized. And
music, there's two sides of it, right? There's the showbiz, and then there's the art form, and obviously there's a whole gradient in between the two. But one thing I've learned, and this is just with friends that I have in music who have achieved certainly more success than I have. I mean, obviously there's very few of us who are going to be, on the level of like Lady Gaga and, Bruce Mars or something. Right. Mm-hmm. The rest of us are floating around, somewhere trying to get up a little bit, but knowing people who've had more success than me and, what I would consider considerable success, what I've learned is it's never enough.
Yeah.
It's never enough. You achieve some goals and you always want, I want to get on this label, or I want to get on this chart. I want to tour with this band, or I want to play here, I want to play there. And all those it's great to like succeed in that way, but it never takes away that feeling that you're still struggling just to keep up with sort of how everybody else lives, with regular jobs. Cause the money, you got to get to a pretty high level where you're living comfortably, say, as compared to, your accountant friend or something like that. And so that struggle is always there. It's never enough. And so I'm not always succeeding at this, but like part of the work is really just trying to understand what it is I'm trying to achieve And so the best way for me to do that is, like I said, to integrate that into the work, because that's what I spend my time doing. And I, you know, not to get all to get too abstract, but like the music is just like a part of the work that I do. Like I really see, I'm using the word work a lot because it's sort of a catch-all, for lack of a better word, for really what I'm, my biggest fear has always been, and this is why I'm still doing music and art and art in general. My biggest fear, even as a young person, you know, a teenager, was to, I didn't want to sleepwalk through life. You know, I remember being really impacted by seeing, like, you know, my grandpa pass away and sort of how that happens. And just thinking about, I'm one of these people that I've been thinking about the end of my life ever since I was in my early 20s.
Sure.
It sort of struck me like a ton of bricks, you know, you're going to die one day.
Yeah.
And I've hung on to that because I don't want to take anything for granted. And this is sort of what you were speaking to, right? I want to make sure that I'm spending my time in a way that is truly valuable to me.
Yeah.
And you gotta make compromises along the way, of course, and you got to keep reassessing and reevaluating. But I didn't want to just get a job, you know, because it makes money and that's what everybody else is doing. And then I get a car and then I get two cars and then I get a garage, get a bigger house, make more money, then get a bigger house. You know, like I didn't want to just get into that hamster wheel of just automatically doing things because you don't think about why you're doing things. So the work I'm doing, and that's why art is important to me, because it helps me really keep a keen focus on what I'm doing, what's important to me, and thinking about it.
You know, I think that it's really easy for people who don't do this to just say, well, why don't you just get a regular job or a job that pays pretty well, and then, you know, make time. You'll have enough money to afford some free time. Make time to do this as a hobby, you know, and do it on the side. And like, you can still be engaged in this thing. And you, if it's something you want bad enough, you can make time for it. And I think for a certain kind of person, that actually, that's a viable option. And I think a lot of people do that. And I'm not, sliding that at all. I think that there are a lot of people who just enjoy knitting, and it's not, they don't have a business. They don't have like an Etsy shop. They're not trying to become a conglomerate of like selling sweaters and becoming like the next big manufacturer. They just really like that to do that when they're done with work and when their day is done and they're watching TV or whatever it is and they're relaxing. They like putting together a scarf or a sweater, and maybe it's just for a family member or a friend, or maybe it's just to add to their collection, but it's just something that they enjoy doing, and it gives them a sense of exercising that creative bone, and it doesn't need to be for any other purpose than just to do it. And I think that that's 100% valid.
Sure.
And not to take anything away from that, but again, it goes back to this idea of like, when I actually evaluate how I want to be spending my life and what I want to be doing when it comes to understanding that I have to make money somehow, I've got to figure out a way to pay my bills, I've got to figure out a way to have income. If I can, I'm going to try to put as much of my energy into this thing as possible. I find myself, and I wonder if you relate to this, I find myself very lucky, and I always have thought of myself as lucky, that for as long as I can remember, I've known what it is that I want to do and who I want to be in the world. And in a general sense, like, it's always been like, it could take many forms. It could be a filmmaker, it could be an actor, it could be a singer-songwriter, but I've never had confusion over which area I would like to head in and which direction I am pulled in. And I meet people all the time who seem to not quite really know what it is that they're passionate about. And I think of it as a gift to not have uncertainty there. Do you feel the same way, that it's like, at least I know what I want to do, and then that's taken care of. I don't need to worry about that, and I can just pursue it.
I can absolutely relate to that. And I totally agree. I mean, I've run many thought experiments when we're talking about, you know, getting a different job or whatever. During the pandemic, I really thought about it. Like, well, I revisited it, where I was like, you know, really looked myself in the face soberly and was like, I think you need to switch into something that makes money. Mm-hmm. And for a whole variety of reasons, but I was really, you know, I really took a look at it and I explored things. I thought about becoming an electrician or something, right? I have some buddies who do that. And then it just didn't happen. I mean, because ultimately what I realized was, well, I started working on Holiday. I was just like, I got songs to write.
Yeah.
And I just put them down. But when I reflect on it now and, you know, I try to picture myself as an electrician, I know I just wouldn't be happy. It's a great job. But to what you're talking about, people can have hobbies on the side, play music for fun. I have friends who do this. It makes sense for them, but it depends. Everybody's got a balance, right? For some people, that's the right balance between, you know, making money and feeling good about the stuff that they can do with that money. And then having this sort of outlet, this creative outlet. But the balance is different for everybody. I have a lot of expectations for myself in terms of what I actually want to create, whether it makes money or not. I mean, this is what I struggle with, right? I need to make some money. But ultimately, I want to do more.
Sure.
Than time would allow if I'm an electrician. And the main thing I think about is I would be working to make money. I'd spend my time. And again, this is totally fine, right? But I know I would struggle with that. Why am I doing this? What's, you know, because ultimately for me, it's like money is a means to an end. Yeah. But I want to, I feel lucky like you do that the one thing I do know is that I do want to spend my time working at sorting whatever this is that I'm trying to sort out. And yeah. So I'm actually pursuing that. And I'm lucky that that's my job because that's a big hole in my life and that I'm trying to fill.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to be obsessed about it. And then the last thing I'll say is if you really want to be in this biz and you want to do it as best as you can, you know what it's like. You got to be in it, right? Yeah. You got to be involved. If you're looking to get auditions, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, he does it on the side, right? You're going to get passed over. So you have to have your hand in the game if you want to play the game. And that's the other part that doesn't always add up.
Well, and you've got to risk, you know, you've got to risk kind of walking the path sometimes without a parachute and something like, and just not really knowing, not really being able to see a clear path and just putting one foot in front of the other and trusting that the path will continue to rise up to meet you. And that there will, you know, it never looks the way I think it will look. And I'm sure if it's the same way to you, it never goes according to my plan, but I've found so far that as long as I've continued to walk this thing, it's continued to be there. And I also, man, I totally know what you mean. Every time I've had a job, like a day job working at a restaurant or whatever, just to make money, just to get by, I can't escape this feeling that time is this commodity that I just don't ever get back. It is one of the most precious commodities, one of the only real commodities there is in a life where nothing is certain, where I don't even, I could die today. And every time I'd be at that job, I'd think, yeah, I know why I'm here. I know I'm here because I need the money and I need to pay my bills. And it is just a means to an end. And I know that I'm working so that I can continue to have money to buy new equipment so that I can make better music and make better art and stuff. And I'm choosing to trade my time for this, but I could never escape that feeling that it's like, but this is time I don't get back. This is just time spent away from people I love and things that I love and activities that I love. And there's nothing about this that is emotionally or spiritually fulfilling to me. It is purely transactional.
Well, in that case, you can embed it in your ultimate purpose, right? Is you need to pay the bills so you can keep doing it. So,
yeah.
So in that, right. But yeah, that's different than say, you know, I'm switching careers, basically. I'm inverting it so that my main energy is going to be put towards some other job. And then I will relegate these creative tasks to the small slice I have left over. That's a whole nother thing that I think sounds like someone like you, someone like me, that's not the right balance. It's not enough.
Yeah. And I like that you talk about how you need to be a little bit obsessed with it and stuff. You know, I look at, it's so interesting from an outsider's perspective, because it always takes the outside to look at people like us and go, to me, it looks like, you know, this is actually working. It might not be working on the level that you think that it needs to. And there is so much pressure, and you've mentioned this, there's so much pressure pulling up into the parking lot and seeing the other cars that the other dads are driving or seeing. Yeah. And there's so much pressure that we put on ourselves to exhibit as, and we hear it from people. As an actor for years, every time I tell someone who doesn't do this that I'm an actor, the question is always like, oh, have you ever been in anything that I would know you from? And that's like, that's their measure of like, well, if you're a real actor, then surely I've seen you in something. And it's like, yeah, maybe you have. Maybe you caught one of the TV shows that I had a 2-minute scene in, but you wouldn't recognize me from it. You wouldn't remember me from it. But also, they don't understand that the majority of people who are acting professionally for a career, you've never heard of. Like, there's theater actors that are just going around doing regional theaters and tours and things like that. And there's people doing bit parts in TV shows and commercials and stuff. And like, they're making money. It's a good subsidiary income, but it's not maybe their main thing. But I think my point is, when I look at you quitting your job at 33 and putting yourself kind of more into an obsessive and full-time space with this thing, I look at it and go, it may appear sometimes like, well, man, it hasn't really come to fruition the way I want it to. It's not really bringing in the money that I was hoping it would bring in. But at the same time, it's like, you're still here. You're still moving forward. The path is still unveiling itself, even though it's not looking the way that maybe you had hoped. And I think I have to remind myself of that sometimes, that I've been trying to do this my entire adult life, and it's still continuing, and it's still continuing to surprise me. And you're right about it never feeling like enough. I think if you had told me 2 years ago that I would have the social media presence that I have right now, I would be like, oh, that means that I did it. That means that I got it. And being in it, it absolutely doesn't feel like that. It feels like it's a step. It feels like it's a move in a good direction, but it also feels very fragile and very fleeting. And it feels like it could be over any second. But what I try to take heart in is the idea that it continues to, the path continues to unveil itself. It continues to surprise me. And I feel like I can have faith that the reason that is because I am choosing day in and day out to continue putting one foot in front of the other on this path. I'm choosing to continue moving down it, even though it constantly feels like I can't see a clear way. I can't see a clear, it's very foggy, and I can't really see how I'm supposed to continue moving forward. But as long as I keep moving.
That's interesting. And one thing I wonder about, like, especially with TikTok, right?
Yeah.
Because you do have a pretty big following. And I would imagine that takes a lot of time. You have to be thinking about that quite a bit, right? I mean, that's something you got to keep putting out, good content.
Yeah.
And, I think it sounds like for you, like, TikTok isn't its own end, right?
Yeah.
You're sort of hoping that that through that, you get different connections, you get different exposure, and that would, could potentially turn into something else, open a door somewhere else, right?
Right. Like I don't want to be making TikToks professionally in 10 years, like I'm hoping, it's great. It's like, it's a thing that I get to do every day that lets me be in my space. I get to act, I get to write, I get to use music, I get to.
So TikTok for you is a tool that it allows you to still, do it the way you want to do it, rather than its own separate thing on the side.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's ideal. Right. I mean, I think about these things obviously, cause so much of it is just getting out there, getting people to know about you. Right.
Uh-huh.
Especially with music. You need to be heard.
Right.
And so, I've always struggled with social media just because I think in a way it's sort of, it's in direct conflict with sort of my MO, which is to try to be like authentic, genuine. And, so much about social media is just sort of the sell, right? I mean, that sort of the sparkly facade that people put up. And so I always struggle with that. TikTok is an interesting one because, I kind of enjoy it, whereas the other ones I don't. But it's still a similar challenge, right? You're trying to give a version of yourself somehow that other people will like. Basically, you're hoping that people are going to like your personality, strangers that you'll never meet. It's a kind of interesting thing to put your effort into. But ultimately, for me, it's like I try to do that in my own way. I haven't had tremendous success by any means, but I'm still finding people that are connecting and saying, you know, contacting me and be like, wow, great music. I'm so glad I found you, that kind of thing. And so It's really meaningful for me that way. But I feel like it could be a slippery slope where TikTok becomes the main thing you do. And then what you really want to do becomes the side thing. That's
Boy, you're preaching to the choir right now. That's it. Yeah. It's like,
question, right?
Yeah. I thought of TikTok as it was going to be this thing that was going to help me promote my music and promote my podcast and promote kind of like myself as an actor and kind of get me out there. And it has become the thing that anytime I try to tell my audience about a new song that I have out or about a new music video that I have out or about ways that they can support me outside of that platform, it's sort of like, and it's not that they're not interested in it. It's that the algorithm, the app itself is like, no, is just like, no, that is not what we want you doing on this platform. We want you just making TikTok content and we do not want you trying to, it's weird. Because I've also seen other artists have success both being a TikTok personality and also saying, hey, I have a new album out, and that album gets hundreds of thousands of streams on Spotify because people know them on TikTok. And I've seen that happen. So I don't know really what I need to do to get into that stream, because that was the idea. But I'm still like, you know what? It's still early days. It's still like, this has been going on for like a little over a year now. And I'm just sort of like, things have happened. I've gotten a lot of acting work, and I've had more record sales than I've ever had in my life because of this platform. And so like, there has been a lot of gaining new traction with new audiences and stuff like that. It's not on the level that I would hope, just like it never is for us. It's never enough. But I'm hopeful that if I continue just minding my own business and moving down this road, that things will continue to pop up. And I'm also terrified that it will all end and disappear in a flash one day, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about delusion. You mentioned this earlier, you know, that, and you've written about this in your music, and I've written about it in my music. I wrote an album in 2017 called Corey Feldman that's all about you know Corey Feldman? He's like,
yeah.
So you know how he's like a musician, he's a singer-songwriter.
Yeah,
he's got like, he's been releasing albums for like 30 years, and they're they're really bad. They're awful. They're really, I think, objectively terrible. And He kind of got really popular, or this video that he did, he went on the Today Show and performed a song from his new album in like 2016, and it blew up on YouTube because it was so bad, and people were like, oh my god, look how bad Corey Feldman is. And he like went on talk shows to talk about it, because they were like, geez, people are being really brutal with you right now. And I just was like, this is it right here, is that this guy has more success than I ever will, maybe. And he's more well known and he gets to go perform on the Today Show. But I think most people in the world can look at what he's doing artistically and go, oh, that guy's not good though at what he's trying to do. And I couldn't escape the idea. So then where do I get off thinking that like I am good? And also, how do I know that I'm not just Corey Feldman? How do I know that I'm not just someone who thinks he's good because maybe he has a few friends that have told him he's good? That whole aspect of like realizing that you can't be objective about what you're making and you don't actually know what it sounds like to other people.
That would be my first question. I presume you saw some of these interviews. Like, did you get that sense that he legitimately thought he was good, or did he kind of have a handle on the fact that, you know, people are interested because he's Corey Feldman?
Oh no.
He's just having fun with it.
Oh no. Like, he says stuff like,
something like that. You know?
He says stuff like, when Eminem was first on the radio, when Nirvana was first on the radio, people didn't get it. And he's like, and that's what it is with me. People just don't get it. So like,
he's legit.
Yeah. Yeah, he thinks that people just are misunderstanding. And
Gotcha.
So I guess my question is, what's your feeling about when you encounter delusional people, like people like who go on American Idol or something and they're trying to be a pop star, but they can't carry a tune in a bucket? Like, should those people try to find something else? Or do you think those people should also pursue the thing that they're passionate about, the same way that you and I are trying to pursue the thing we're passionate about?
Well, hey, I'm in a position to tell anybody what to do, but here's the thing about your Corey Feldmans and, you know, and the people we delight in watching them make fools of themselves.
Yeah.
On The Voice or whatever it is. It's that along the way you have to keep assessing. I guess this is the thing, and I'm sort of hyper aware of these things because of what I've said already. Just I'm continually analyzing myself, trying to sort out what's just in my head and what's out there, and measuring my perceptions versus what I think other people's perceptions of me. Mm-hmm. It's a whole labyrinth that is a really foggy place to make any sense out of, right? But this is really at the heart of what's of like all philosophical pursuit. Since the dawn of man, right, is trying to sort these things out.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a good answer other than the best that you can do is realize that your whole universe exists in your own head, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to continually measure that against understanding that everybody else is walking around in their own universe and they're in their own head. And there's very little overlap between, I think, our true experiences. We sort of connect on what we can, but there's nothing more complicated or difficult than truly understanding what someone else experiences, right?
Right.
We know this. And so, but the best you can do is try to, when you get feedback, to sort of figure out which category to put it in, right? How much stock to put in that feedback. I mean, we know we're vulnerable, right? When you're a performer, it's like you could have 100 people say, oh, that was great. That was great. And one person's like, well, you know, the bass was a little loud. You know,
yeah.
And I'll go to sleep like thinking about that, right? So, you know, it's not easy to do, but you have to continually take in that feedback and try to assess whether it's legit, whether you need to adjust or not. The people that we see on like American Idol, these are people who have ignored all feedback, right? Yeah. Which I presume is probably the good feedback they get is probably pretty fluffy coming from like aunts and uncles and best friends and stuff. Yeah. Right. And I would put those people in the category of not having well-developed critical thinking skills. And that could be a whole topic of another podcast, which I think is also at the heart of the sort of the true pandemic that we're enduring here.
I think so too.
Lacking critical thinking skills in education.
Yeah.
But that falls into the same category. It's just living in your completely invested in your own world and not taking in those outside signs or totally disregarding them. So it's a balancing act once again, but it takes a lot of energy and you know, it's easier, I think, for some people to just think that they're the best.
Well, and it's interesting too, because, and I don't know if you've experienced any of this with maybe some songs that went bigger or that got more of an audience, but it's like, I found that the more people that are listening to something that I release or watching a music video that I put out, like the more chance that there's going to be someone in the comments. Most of the comments are positive. Most of the comments are the more people that are listening to it, the more chance there's going to be someone who says, this is fucking terrible. You're really bad at this. And I've had those comments pop up where it's like, it'll be 100 comments of people saying how much the song meant to them and how much they connected with it. And then there's one person who's like, hey, listen, man, you suck. Like that, this is bad.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm like,
you know, and I know that I also attract those people because of my political leanings on TikTok and stuff. And sometimes my political foes will just find their way to my music and just will like kind of troll me. But it's also like, I think there can be this idea that like, oh, well, the bigger you get, haters gonna hate. So it's almost more proof. The hate fuels me. But right. You know, and then it's, I don't know. Like I will say this. When I wrote that album, Corey Feldman, I genuinely wasn't sure how I felt about my own music. And I was like, I like it, but I also might be totally off the mark and hearing it in a different way than other people are hearing it. And I might actually suck. And these days, when someone tells me like, hey man, you're not good at making music, I'm just kind of like, well, listen, you might not like it, and that's, you might not connect to it. It might not be your thing, but I don't think I'm bad at making music. I actually think that I've put in enough time and enough work on it. And I think that, like, just from a technical standpoint, I think I know how to do it. And I think I know how to structure a song and how to, like, you know, like, I don't think I'm bad at it.
Yeah. Well, that's just it, right? I mean, there's sort of two things, right? The what we can agree on is the person who is delusional, I think is safe to say, the people who are just god awful and go on American Idol thinking they're the next Celine Dion.
Yeah.
If they can make a record and make money and make a living from that, then go for it, you know? But I think the reality is they're going to be forced into doing another job, right? That was sort of the original question, right? Should they go find another job? Mm-hmm. They're going to be forced to. And if not, then, you know, good for them. They won the lottery. I think the rest of us, yeah, if you can keep doing it, whether you like it or whether other people like it or not, if you can keep doing it, it means something to you, then that's, I think, you know, that's the baseline, like, then it's worthwhile doing. When it's like someone like me, where that is the main thing I do, and I'm trying to make money doing it, and I've integrated my identity in with that, it's a very vulnerable thing, right? And I'm always assessing that delusion. But the thing that keeps me sort of feeling safe enough to keep doing it, that I'm not completely delusional, I think we're all a little delusional,
sure,
those of us trying to do this, but is that I continually get really meaningful, you know, it's sort of once in a while I will get someone sending me a message through Instagram or something, or an email, or even in person sometimes at a show, where it's really clear that something in my music, whether it's a song or whatever, has really touched them profoundly.
Yes.
And
I'm one of those people.
You know, whether they're delusional or not, that to me is as real as it can get. And so, you know, and this is from my wife, Karen, her encouragement, because there's so many ups and downs, right? These sort of emotional ups and downs. She's like, you should start like documenting those and just like put them somewhere to remind yourself. And so I did that, you know, one day I was like, oh, I'll do that. I can't say I've continued to do that, but you know, I sort of went through all these comments that I got and just put them together in one place where I could find them. And it was really moving, you know, because it's easy to, like I said, I'm living in my own little world, right? I'm locked in my head, and it's easy to get lost in there. And so that's the stuff that, to me, that's real life. When someone is really moved, you know, by something I've written that they've really connected, like on a human basic level, that tells me I'm doing something right. And I know that doesn't fit into like mainstream success, what most people want out of music, right? Most people see music as entertainment or like a distraction, something to just like feel good while you're driving or something, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a slice of people that where music can take them into places that they don't get to go anywhere else in life. And I'm one of those people, you know, a lot of us, right? Lying in bed as teenagers with headphones on, like just floating in a different world that you couldn't put words to, but it was like a poetic space that just felt great to be in, right? So if I can allow someone to get into that space through my music, I mean, that's the best. That's what I wanted. Yeah. So it's a reminder that it keeps me going in some way.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to talk about, and that's a great response. You know, I think that I also think that just I used to really be like, someone needs to tell these people, someone needs to let them know so that they stop embarrassing themselves. And the older I get, the more I'm like, I don't know, man. Do what makes you happy. Like whatever. Like it's just kind of like life's too short.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's clear these people have a very high tolerance for embarrassment.
Yeah.
Right. So we're embarrassed for them, but that seem bothered by it, right?
I'm embarrassed for me. I'm constantly embarrassed. I'm embarrassed every time I put something out. Like it's embarrassing. And you sort of have to be willing to be embarrassed over and over and over again to do this stuff. I'm literally putting out musical versions of like my diary for people to listen to. And the people who I'm talking about are listening to it and stuff. It's embarrassing, you know, and then being not a teenager who's making TikToks and stuff. And like, it's, you know, it's part of it is just being willing to be embarrassed. So what makes my embarrassment more noble than someone who I think is like kidding themselves or something, you know?
Sure.
And it, then that's just my subjective opinion of that they're kidding themselves. You know, I try to judge less and less people's creative expression. I definitely think there are markers of like, things that I think makes it are clear when a person has a technical proficiency or something like that. I was even going to say like maybe part of your interest in TikTok is not only this idea that you're connecting with an audience and letting them know who you are as a person, but also you seem to have an interest in filmmaking too. Like you and I relate on this too. Like we make our own music videos and direct our own music videos. And that's something I really like doing. And you like doing that too.
Sure. I always felt like if I didn't go into music, I would have, or I should have gone into movies. Cause it's the other sort of, you know, art form that I feel equally as passionate about, mm-hmm. but have done very little other than make my own little things. But I feel the same way about movies as I do about music. Like it's such a big part of my life. And it's just, again, it's just a medium that has that ability to just like transport and put you in a different world and make you think about things a little differently. And I just feel so inspired by the creativity that people put into it, the artistry, you know? I started just making my own little videos, partly because it costs a fortune to get someone else to do it for you.
Yeah.
Never happy with that. I mean, how many, you know, my worst nightmare is like, you know, being, having a pool party with like girls on shoulders, like throwing beach balls.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it makes a great country video, I guess, but that's my worst nightmare. So in TikTok, that's kind of like what I ultimately got into it wanting to do, is make these little vignettes. They didn't do well at all, but I think it's some of my best stuff.
But it's a fun place to talk about this all the time for creative people. It's a fun place to experiment with those tools and be like, cool, I don't need a really expensive camera or like really expensive sound equipment. I can sort of play around with just the basic tools of filmmaking as a craft with this 30 to 60 second format and just sort of play around with editing techniques and play around with how I want to choose to light a scene, how I want to choose to portray a certain character or a certain idea. And it's sort of making the tools of filmmaking a lot more accessible and approachable and basic, and not making it so, you know,
it feels good to do. When I make a little video, like a TikTok that I'm really happy with, like I feel the same way as though I just wrote a song I'm really happy with. I feel content. Like I'll go to bed, you know, feeling good. You know, I'll wake up and, you know, have, you know, seven notifications, like, and then I'll feel terrible because nobody liked it. But it's the same. The creative side is really satisfying, so I do like that.
Yeah.
But that's the funny thing about TikTok, is that immediate feedback that you get, that, you know, you can chalk it up to the algorithm or whatever. But ultimately, it's like it's pass or fail. You know, within a day of creation.
Yeah. Well, I love your music videos. You've got the right philosophy. I always try to tell, you know, aspiring musicians or people who want to make a music video. I started like a production company with a friend, and we make music videos for people sometimes. And I make a lot of my own music videos, but I always try to tell people, like, you're probably going to have an idea that's way more expensive than you think it is. You're going to have an idea that's multiple locations with a big cast that's going to take 4 or 5 days to shoot. And what you need to have is a single location, a small cast that we can shoot in an afternoon, because that's what you have budget for. And like, yeah. And people think that that's very limiting, but it really isn't. If you're willing to like embrace those parameters, you can do a lot with finding interesting locations that shoot well, that look good on camera, an interesting concept that is very watchable and very like cinematic, and it doesn't need to be too complex. It can be simple, and you know, if you really still want, ideally, the music to be the centerpiece of the video. You don't want the video to be such a thick involved storyline that people aren't even hearing the song. It's like you just need something for people to watch that's engaging while they listen to this song, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't have to spend a lot of money doing it.
You really don't. You really don't.
A good idea and a good eye goes a long way.
It really does. And you know, what's nice about making music videos too is you don't need sound, which is like the hardest thing to get right with indie film. And so it's like such a nice way to experiment. I've really enjoyed making music videos because it's made me feel like I get to dip a toe into that world of filmmaking and experimenting with like what's my eye and how do I see things on camera without having to like pull out all the bells and whistles and stops and all the money that
huge technological know-how. Right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. This is actually the last thing and then we'll wrap it up. We've brushed on lightly sort of the idea of fame and, that it can be a means to an end and stuff. And that like, you know, I think it's easy to say as an artist who's toiling or striving or on a path that like, that's not, I don't really want fame. I had a friend the other day ask me, we were talking about famous people and why certain patterns of behavior arise with people who are famous. And I said, I don't know. I think part of it is that we sensationalize the worst stories of famous people. And we sort of like, we don't really talk about the famous people who aren't doing really crazy things in public. Like that doesn't make headlines. But also I think that there's an aspect of it where people might be a little bit disconnected and it's hard to have a normal human experience when you're in that space. And then my friend goes, well, why are you trying to be famous then? And I said, I don't think I am. And he goes, you're not? With everything that you do online, you're not trying to be famous? And I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, well, you know. And yeah, so I, because I'm like, it's not that I'm not. It's my answer to that question has always been, I would like to do this with my life. Fame seems like a way for me to be able to do that comfortably without the fear of it all crumbling and falling apart, like having a good foothold in the industry. It also seems like a way to like have a decent sized audience that actually is interested when I'm working on a new project that will wait, that will be patient, that will say, go ahead and take a year and a half to make the next album or 2 years or a year and a half to make the next movie, whatever. We'll be here when you get back. It seems like a way to have security in this field, but what does fame represent to you when you think about the potential of something you make breaking through or something? And you know,
yeah, I, yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, you could really go a lot of places with that, but I mean, ultimately I'd like to say that it's something I don't really think about. Mm-hmm. Because I have the luxury of being so far away from famous that you know, occasionally someone will like, you know, come up to me in a bookstore or something, you know, and say, oh, I'm a fan of your music. Very rarely. But I mean, on one side, like I really have never been that, I've never been interested in fame, I guess, ultimately. That's not why I do it. That's not why you do it, right? This is stuff I was doing it. Mm-hmm. I think fame just gets sort of lumped in a bit with pursuing getting noticed because, you know, you do something, you're proud of it. You want to share that with people. You want people to see it. You want more people to see it. Right.
Right.
So I think fame just sort of comes along with that, but that's very different than it's clear there are some people and the people you're referring to who sort of are in the news for just outrageous behavior or something. Mm-hmm. You get the idea that those are people who fame is the end that they're pursuing. That's what they want is fame.
Yes.
Whereas that's not what I want. If that comes with, I mean, it does. It sounds terrible, really, to be famous.
It does. Right?
But yeah, so that's the trade. I mean, you know, I think about it because I'm in Winnipeg. It's not a really big city, but it's big enough. I'm anonymous, but you know, enough people kind of know about me, at least in some circles, that, you know, if I go to the nude beach or something, like I start wondering, like, am I too much of a celebrity? Like, is this risky? But, so there's that kind of thing. You're not as anonymous anymore that I don't like that, to be honest. I like being a regular guy. One of the things I do when I go on tours, often if I'm by myself, I spend a lot of time by myself and I'll drive. This is kind of weird to say, but you know, like I'll drive to like a suburban mall and just like walk around. And it's like, there's something that's like comfort to me. Something, it's like soul food, just to be around like what I consider the most ordinary people. And I do this sometimes at night, like if I'm in the right frame of mind coming home from somewhere, like I'll just stop in at McDonald's. It's pre-pandemic, you know, but like go in and just sit there and like, you know, order something, but I'll sit there and just kind of take in the scene. And because it's just regular life going by. And that's, I always find that like a good reminder. And so for me, I think the closer you get into the upper echelons of fame, I think the farther away you get from that just everyday experience that most people have just being a regular person. And ultimately I'm always trying to tap into that because I want to try and be as sane as I can. So yeah, fame is not a thing I really want necessarily, but you know, but it's, I want recognition. Yeah. I want accolades. Of course. I want people to say, hey, you're awesome. I want everybody to love my music. And I don't know where the line is, where that will start to become comfortable, but I feel I'm pretty far away from that.
Well, you know, you've got a fan in me, and you know, you've got a lot of thanks, fans, man, out there and stuff. But
I don't want to come across all, you know, like I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. I mean, you know, I'm working at it, and I feel like I'm making stuff that I feel really good about, and it is building. Like you said, you know, there's a path that you're on, and I feel like things are getting better from here on. And you know, I'm 41 now, but I really feel like that. I feel like I'm at the beginning of something, not necessarily at the end. And I feel good about that. So I don't want to come across as I have a bit of a Eeyore complex, you know?
No. Cause I'm the same way. And, I don't feel famous at all. The last year of my life, a lot of people have been reaching out and being like, oh, so you're famous now. And I'm like, no, it's really like not at all. Like I still go to the store and I still walk around freely. And it's that same thing you're talking about. I think about all the time what it would be like to get to a space where I feel like I don't know that I can safely just go out to the store anymore, because every time I go, I can't just go about my business. I'm stopped at least 10 times to talk to someone that I don't necessarily have the time to talk to.
And, yeah.
You know, and that's
all that money you'd have to spend on anything.
Yeah. Right. I thought when the pandemic first started, I kept thinking, man, if I was super famous right now, I would go to the store just to walk around with my mask on, and knowing that when it was first beginning, like no one was really looking at each other. And like, we were all like very afraid of each other in public. And I was like, if I was super famous, if I was like an A-list celebrity, I would go to the mall or something with my mask on and just walk around and just be like, it's been so long since I've been able to just be, in public, and kind of hide in plain sight. But I agree with you. It doesn't sound like an appealing lifestyle for so many reasons. But on the other side of it, it's like, well, I do want more people to experience the music that I make. I want more people to experience. Like, I love that people like my TikToks, but all the time I'm like, I wish you guys would go check out this music video that I spent a lot more time and put a lot more like into. I feel way more proud of this music video than I do of anything that's on my TikTok page, you know. But it's all just appreciating the feedback that is there, and you know, understanding that's part of being just a regular person doing this stuff, and that really at the end of the day, this is it. This is my life as an artist. This is what it looks like. And I'm not waiting for anything to begin. I'm not, like, this is it, you know, and for better or worse. And this is kind of how I'm living my life. And so, I don't know. I try to enjoy it. I try to enjoy where I can, and the people who are finding it and discovering it. And anyway, I really hope that you keep doing this stuff. I hope that Holiday is not the last Slow Leaves album that I hear. If it is, that's fine. You've got a nice body of work that you've built, but I hope that it's not. I hope I hear another one.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm working on a new one right now. So
great. Sounds good. You know, and I just hope good things for you. You know, I think you're incredibly talented, and I relate so much to everything that you've made, and it's been really nice to talk with you.
Thanks a lot, man. Really a pleasure. And All the best to you. Good luck with everything.
So yeah, again, I just can't tell you enough how much I really, really, really recommend that you go and listen to all of his albums. I go backwards through people's albums when I listen to them. Like, I started with Holiday because it was the newest one, and then I went backwards, and that's an interesting track. But it also might be interesting to start with the earliest album that you can find on streaming platforms and move forward. I think that could be an interesting trajectory through it as well. They're very cohesive as just like works, as albums. You can really hear where he's at in different phases and stuff like that. And I mean, I've listened to three albums all the way through now, and I haven't heard a song I didn't like. So do that, and also check out Grant's music videos on YouTube. If you just look up Slow Leaves on YouTube, he's got self-produced music videos for a lot of his songs, and I just related to this guy so much because I do that as well. If you've ever been on my YouTube, I've got a lot of music videos that I make for my songs as well, but he's got like a ton more. He's really on it with that stuff, and he puts out music videos for like pretty much every single single from every one of his albums, and he makes them. You can tell that he self-produces them, but you can also tell that he's got a really good eye for this stuff and a really good sensibility for it. And it's a cool, I don't know, it's just, I think it's cool to support people making art at this level, and he's doing such a good job of it too. It's not like you'll feel like you're doing charity, like you're just like, oh, look at me being so good supporting this indie artist. It's genuinely good stuff. It's stuff that you're going to want to share with your friends and family and be like, listen to this, or check this video out. I was really moved by this. There are a lot of his videos that I think are very, very powerful, and then just the music in general I think is really, really powerful. I'm going to say the credits of the show, but I stick around because I'm going to finish the show with another song by Grant. I'm going to play another one of his songs that I think is just one of the most hauntingly beautiful songs I've maybe ever heard. It's definitely one of the best songs I've heard in a long, long time. And this is kind of the song that I lead off with usually when I'm showing people Grant's music, when I'm like finding new Slow Leaves super fans. And the song is called Sentimental Teardrops. But I'm going to do the credits of the show first. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, or by looking up Austin Archer on streaming platforms. My music and this podcast are mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to themarmalademusic.com and hit up Chris and have him mix and master your next thing. Hey, Grant, if you're listening to the show, go hit up Chris at themarmalademusic.com and have him maybe like do a single with him, do an EP with him, just test it out. He's great, he's the best. Tell him I sent you and he's gonna give you 20% off. If for no other reason than for that, just the fact that like Chris will give you 20% off the first project, you should hit him up. He's fantastic. And you too, audience members out there who have an audio project you want to do, hit up Chris. Okay, that's pretty much it for the show. Oh, patreon.com/AustinArcher. We can always use more Patreon patrons. We'd love to have you over there. If you can swing it, we'd love to have you. Okay, that's it. Here is Grant's song, Sentimental Teardrops, in its entirety. I love this song, and I hope you do too. Love y'all very much. Okay, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Sometimes I wanna be sad, sometimes I wanna be happy. I just wanna feel everything, the cheerful and the sappy. I just wanna be loved as everybody should. Sometimes I wanna say nothing and still be understood. Sometimes it's hard to be easy, tough to be cool. Time keeps slipping on past me, no matter what I do. If a sentimental teardrop is running down my cheek, I'm holding back a rain cloud that needs to be released. I like to hear the rainfall as I go to sleep, to wash away those old dreams I shouldn't keep. These sentimental teardrops need to fall from time to time. Sometimes I try to be honest, without a doubt. I try to tell the truth sometimes, but the opposite comes out. Sometimes I want to make love, I won't deny it. Sometimes I want to talk dirty, then feel embarrassed by it. Sometimes I want to freak out, I want to be numb. Sometimes I feel so angry, but not at anyone. And if a sentimental teardrop is running down my cheek, I'm holding back a rain cloud that needs to be released. I like to hear the rainfall, it helps me go to sleep, to wash away those old dreams I shouldn't keep. Sentimental teardrops need to fall from time to time. Ooh. Sometimes I want to be famous, but I don't want to try. I can't help but be lazy, and maybe that's why. Sometimes I want to be modest, civil and restrained. Sometimes I want to go naked and not feel ashamed. I get so tired of being quiet, I want to yell. Sometimes I want to know how it feels to be somebody else. And if a sentimental teardrop is running down my cheek, I'm holding back a rain cloud that needs to be released. I love to hear the rainfall, it helps me go to sleep, to wash away those old dreams I shouldn't keep. These sentimental teardrops need to fall from time to time. These sentimental teardrops need to fall from time. Time. Ooh. Far from time to time.